You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense greatness of the work that God does in these out-of-the-way places. I am your host, Joe Epley. And today is part one of another review on a rural resource. I have definitely enjoyed getting into another book, another author who is continuing to write on the power of God to work in rural places. And I'm excited because it's an author that we've reviewed before. The author's name is Brad Roth. He recently wrote a book called God's Country, which I have also reviewed on this podcast, and I highly recommend you go back and check that out. But today, I am holding his second book, Fly Over Church, How Jesus' Ministry in Rural Places is Good News Everywhere. I definitely enjoyed picking up this book. I was excited because when I first read Brad Roth's book, I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And this book, I think, even surpassed it. And I was just so excited for Flyover Church. I dove into it maybe just being like, okay, here's a book on rural. Am I going to learn something I haven't before? And his words and the depth of authenticity with which he spoke really got me. And so for me, this book has just been awesome. I devoured it in a couple days because I was so excited. Next week, we will actually have a conversation with the author himself. He'll be on to answer some questions about his book. But this week, it's just going to be you and me just kind of thumbing through this book, and I'm going to tell you all the parts I liked about it. I hope you read this book because I know that you'll underline different words than I did and that you'll check out different spots than I did and different pieces will speak to you. But to give you a glimpse of why I think this book is cool, I'm just going to be thumbing through it, reading different things, and we're going to kind of talk about them. So that's our plan for today. That's the roadmap. The first thing I noticed about this book is the intro did what I would hope every book about rural does, and it really just gave value to what happens there. I think, obviously, as those who work in rural, there's a huge chip on our shoulder, or at least a potential chip of, does anybody see the value of what I do? And so I think it's just a fitting place for Pastor Brad to start when he just kind of establishes the value of a rural community and really defines it. Because again, I think rural can be really vague and it can be really broad. I've heard people say everything from 30,000 to 40,000 people and all the way down to 80 people and 100 people. And you get Midwest rural and Northeast rural and Southern rural and all these different faces of it. But this is what he said about rural. He said, beyond statistical designations, rural is a way of seeing the world. He quotes a sociologist who calls it a moral community, not insinuating that rural places are moral and suburbs or cities are immoral. Rather, it indicates how rural communities have a common identity that they understand themselves by. And I would argue that this is true. I don't know how to always explain it or put into words, but there is a sense in which you understand you are part of that group. Like it's a self-identifying marker that happens at some point, whether you're born there or moved into a rural place. It's like you wake up one day and go, man, I think this place has changed me in a way that I see the world differently. I really love this next line. He said, rural is characterized by being a known and knowable community. Man, I read that and it was like water to my soul, because again, it puts it into a perspective that I can really identify with, where I say, man, that is the difference we're talking about. In a rural community, it is not just a known community. We joke a lot about how people kind of get all up in your business. But deeper than that, it's a place where you can't just like hide. Like you have to be known for who you truly are. Your authenticity or lack thereof is on display. And it is a knowable community. Like you can dive in, you can know it, you can be prepared for it, you can go after it. And I just think that quality is so cool. Going forward here, and I'm just kind of thumbing through different pages. Yeah, I really love, again, a part of rural to me that is, I guess, stands out above a lot of other things is how much rural really matters when it comes to story, right? When it comes to what is the history of a place and a town and a people. in that sense, it feels a lot like a missionary context where we say things like, oh, well, what's the history of the country that you're a missionary to? Or what's the culture that you're walking into? Or what are the important events that relate to the history of this people group? And I think rural has a lot of that energy to it. For example, he writes in here, we minister from place to place. Rural pastors and leaders come into a place rich with stories and relationships. We learn to respect and value the narrative watershed of the community. This is not just because rural places know and define themselves by these stories and relationships, but because God was already at work before we came on the scene, unfolding the great story of God's love for this particular people and place. This gets to the heart of how I feel about rural, is at some point, and at least for me, the roller coaster of my journey in the rural church I got to youth pastor at was that I came in not understanding the story. I began to learn individual stories of people in the town, and at some point in the journey, it all combined into this big narrative. And then there was a moment where I had been, I guess in a lot of ways, successfully running this youth center we were running for about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. And I found a picture from 1999. To put this in context, I was, 7 years old in 1999. And a church board purchased an old 7-Eleven in the middle of my small town, Baker, Montana, turned it into a youth center. And I realized in 2016, 2017, 2018, whatever it was, I kind of paused and I was looking at this picture and I thought to myself, man, before I even knew who Jesus was, God was at work in this rural community. Like the success I got to walk into, the season I got to enjoy, where we were reaching teenagers with the gospel, was the result of a prayerful decision made by a group of people from when I was 7 years old. And it just blew me away where I was like, this is what my heart hopes people see about a rural place, is that it's not just a place you end up and that like God happens to be there when you walk in. God is at work in these communities before you get there, after you leave, and every time in between. It's a powerful thought. Continuing on, this next part I don't actually want to share because it kind of makes me feel guilty and convicted about how I've treated rural. But it killed me a little bit because the author, Brad, is talking about numbers, right? And he's talking about numbers in the sense of how, you know, I think a common stone to throw at the larger church is we say, oh, well, they measure success by the numbers, which first of all isn't fair. And second of all, he kind of calls out rural pastors because he says we do the same thing. You know, he says we may not say, oh, we reached 500 people for Christ, but we'll start to talk percentages and say, oh, well, who else is reaching 75% of their student body or 80% of their, you know, community for the gospel? And I was very convicted, number one, because I've shared that stat as a reflection of my own ministry, trying to grapple with my own success or lack thereof. But it really just, it just killed me. He writes this, he said, this sort of counting, referencing kind of this counting by percentage or counting in different ways that we in rural do, he said, it's just one more variation on trying to nail down meaning by measuring it in the usual ways, how many and how much, its extent as a stand-in for significance. Man, it just kills me because I'm like, this is what we do. Like, I want to feel significant. And since I can't measure up, I take the same broken system of measuring success and I just twist it, make it rural and say, see, I have success. When in reality, I think God is calling us to redefine metrics at any given corner. You know, my new role involves being a youth director for the state of Montana. And I made a joke to a friend the other day where I said, I feel like a lot of my job is just meandering around the state, loving people well and loving leaders well. And it's the first time in my life that I've been mostly at peace with that own definition of my job, where I'm like, okay, I could measure it by how many people attend our events and this and that and the other. But I said, honestly, isn't it just kind of meandering around and loving people well? And so I just really identified with that in a negative sense where I was like, yeah, I've been there. Man, another piece of this I really loved is, gosh, I got to make sure I find it here. I'm scrolling through the book as we go, but I really love, again, how he allows rural to be defined by more than just one dominant narrative. I think we do this to anybody that we consider the other. I think a lot of people from small places do this to big churches in big places, and vice versa. I think people who are in big churches do this to small places and small churches. But we tend to tell one story, and we say, oh, every megachurch is, every big church is, every small town is. And then we fill it in with whatever usually kind of broad brush, not fully telling the truth, analysis that we have from the outside. And Brad says it this way. He talks about kind of Living with Integrity as a pastor, and he says this: we need to refuse to tell a single story and instead allow ourselves to be schooled in telling frayed stories and beautiful stories and stories of struggle. And the thing I really loved is, number one, he said the phrase be schooled, right? He talked about refusing to allow ourselves to tell a single story, but instead to be educated. I think one of my biggest heartbeats about the rural church is that oftentimes people go in and they're well-meaning people, but they say things like, well, I'm just here to teach. And it's like, no, you're here to learn. Like, how arrogant of us, how arrogant of me, who had come in from a larger place when I moved to rural, to think that it was all a one-way street, not recognizing that some of the deepest and most profound lessons of my life have come from a reaction and a place within a rural context. And then he talks about just the different kinds of stories. You know, I jokingly saw a video that was talking about how Marvel movies, you know, that have come out, I mean, there's, I don't know, 30 plus, 40 plus of them now, but they talked about how they all tell the same story. And somebody was passionately defending Marvel movies, and they said, they are the same as our rainbows and sunsets. And I remember, like, the indignation of this, I don't know, comedy video, but I just remember laughing because I was like, oh, that's how it is for all of us. Like, we can sit there and say, oh, you've seen one sunset, you've seen them all. But if you truly look at a sunset, you begin to realize that there are many different kinds, that there's many different ways to look at what appears at first to be the same picture. And I really love what the author does in this moment, because he says, hey, rural is a big picture. And it is important that if we're coming in from the outside, or if we've been pastoring there a while, that we never forget that we are actually dealing with a whole framework of stories, an entire perspective that includes a multitude of voices, a multitude of histories that kind of make up one small town context. Continuing on, I came to a point in the book where, again, and this even comes from recent interactions, because, again, I pastor in a state that we would define as primarily rural. You know, Montana has, gosh, I think 7 cities that are over 10,000 people. And even most of those cities, by a lot of government standards and statistical analysis, would still be considered rural, even if they're a town of, you know, heaven forbid, 20,000 or 30,000, you know. Our biggest towns are not even suburbs of large metropolitan areas. And so, but I was really diving into a problem with somebody. I was trying to, you know, come alongside them and coach them through it. And I thought a lot about, like, how in church we're often taught that we should be trying everything, right? We take a lesson from, you know, business, or we take a lesson from innovative companies. We hear this said rather inspirationally, and we talk a lot about how we need to fail forward, we need to fail fast. Like, when we talk about trying to grow a church, especially in a rural church, like, I think we're always afraid that we're kind of one poor decision away from the church closing, or from great struggle, or from this insurmountable shift in momentum. And so we talk about, like, man, we can't be afraid to take risks. We have to fail, and we have to be willing to fail, and we have to kind of step forward with an attitude of, I'm going to risk and experiment and innovate, because if not, the church will die. And on, like, 90% of occasions, I agree with that sentiment. Like, if we don't take risks, we will probably go backwards. Like, if we don't inherently innovate and put our, you know, stick our neck out there, like, we're going to miss something and we could die. But the other problem is that I read this quote from the book, and it just made me think of the rural church so much. It said the big idea was that innovation can only happen when organizations create a culture where it's okay to fail, and where failure is celebrated, where they try and fail fast and fail often. But what I realized is that in the rural church, I think the one thing this rubs up against that becomes a struggle is oftentimes these innovative tech companies, they're playing around with large sums of money. A larger church can fail forward and fail often because the budget is there to sustain that kind of attitude and atmosphere. If you come into a rural church and you say, man, we're going to put all our eggs in one basket, we're going to put every bit of the reserve that we have into this one outreach, and it fails, not only could you legitimately put the church in a place of financial hardship or destitution, but also you might find that you've lost all your credibility. And so I think that instead, a rural piece of advice would be to fail smart and fail free. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to innovate and take risks, just make sure to try and take risks that don't cost a lot of resources. Because again, to gain the credibility to make big change that does cost resources, you have to pick small battles where if you fail in trying to do something new to reach people, it's not going to reflect so poorly on you that you're going to kind of expend people's ability to follow you through that. And that just really spoke to me because, again, I think I've been looking for a philosophy of what it looks like to innovate in a rural church because, again, there's just not as many resources and not as much trust to throw around. I actually think, you know, I'm going to flip ahead a couple pages because I think there was a mindset I really enjoyed. He shared about this, and he talks about maybe churches who have experienced decline, right? He says this, "Congregations and communities that have experienced decline come to frame life differently. Their expectations of what's possible shift, and it becomes challenging to get excited about new ideas. So many visions have fizzled, so many plans crumbled. It's a kind of collective trauma, and leadership in these rural communities will always require an empathetic angle. Rural church leadership is always healing work." And I, again, guys, I cannot stress enough that you should read this book because I just did not have words for what Pastor Brad was able to put in a single paragraph where he said, man, sometimes we roll into a rural community and we say, well, they won't accept new ideas or I'm trying to get change across. And I'm like, listen, people have a shared history of watching new initiatives crumble. I mean, you talk to somebody about their main street that used to be booming in the 1970s, and how many restaurants have they seen open and close since then? How many young families have come in and out of their church when the opportunities weren't there? How many pastors have cycled in and out looking for greener pastures or struggling to overcome the lethargy of a small community? I had the pleasure of serving under a lead pastor who I think is currently at the time of this recording pushing 17 or 18 years in the same rural church. But before him, I think there was maybe five or six pastors in 10 years at our rural church. And I just can't help but thinking like how long my lead pastor worked to reestablish trust. And anyone coming in the middle of that season would say, man, why aren't we changing faster? Why aren't we moving quicker? And we have to look back at 10 years and even longer before that of a pastor showing up, a pastor leaving, a business opening, a business closing. And we realize that it's not that people don't want to change. It's just that, man, oh man, our expectations have been changed by constant hardship and trial. And so I think that it gives me a lot of grace, a lot of patience, and a lot of willingness to stick it out where I say, man, if you're finding yourself in a rural place and you say, man, I just don't know, they're not moving quickly with ideas. I'm like, just settle in. Because my goodness, like people have been hurt before and they just need to know that you're going to stay and care. And so that was so encouraging to me to kind of just have words to put that into place. I was actually having another coffee with someone on the day of this recording and talking about community and talking about community in the sense of like how weird I feel like community is, especially in a rural church, because I can guarantee you that the highest points of my time in a rural church were the community, right? It's the people you find and discover and the people who end up being close to you. But some of my toughest points also came from that same community. The author puts it this way. He says, we need community, but it's exactly at that place of becoming a community that we experience some of our biggest challenges. This place of fusion is also a place of fission. We can't live with community and we can't live without it. And then he affectionately calls it the fishbowl effect. But like, I can't tell you how much, because again, I think all of us go through days where we lean into this community, where we say, man, there's nothing like a small town. And then there's days where we come home and we might complain to a close friend or a spouse or whoever. And we say, ugh, there is just nothing like this small town. And it's with exasperation and frustration because yet another minutia of our lives has been put on display. The way we interacted with somebody, the off moment we had, the exchange we shared. And it can be so frustrating. But what I've found is a rural community has such potential to make me live the most authentic life possible for Jesus. Because I recognize in very real time that there is an instant reward for exhibiting Christ-like behavior and an instant social punishment for kind of letting that rest. You know what I'm saying? And so I really love, again, putting this sentiment into words because I agree. It can be so hard to live within a small town community because your life is so on display. but I watch people in my life make morally questionable decisions, and I think to myself, man, if only they had been put under the pressure and the microscope of a constant community, where now, I'm not saying, because again, it would be arrogant beyond all get out for me to say my integrity is impeccable or above question and temptation. So with humility, I just want to say that my integrity as a minister, the way I was formed and shaped, it was just forced to be just at the highest possible standard I could muster, because I knew that if I didn't, my community would stop listening to my message because of the sake of my life and my decisions. And so anytime I can get that across or see others communicating that, I'm like, man, what a good piece of advice to just really lean into the discomfort of a community that shapes us to be more like Jesus. Looking ahead, I think my final thought, and we're actually going to talk about it next week, and so I won't get into it too much, but I really think that he talked a lot about the theology of the resurrection when it comes to rural communities. And Pastor Brad talked about how resurrection is not this one-time event that happened. It is the effect that the church is meant to have on the world around it. And guys, like, I am sitting at my desk recording this, but I can tell you that I really, really want to just jump out of my seat, because the sheer surge of energy, excitement, and hope that that concept brings me is almost enough to make me physically react. Because again, if we can get a hold of this, it changes the way we view our context. Whether you're at a church that is flourishing or declining or plateauing or anything in between, we have to walk into communities and go, anywhere there is death. And rural communities have so much when it comes to death and decline. We are surrounded by narratives of what used to be and the sadness of what might be now. But there is always hope for resurrection. In fact, the one guarantee of death from the Christian perspective is that God can bring resurrection. And so again, these have been my thoughts. Please join us next week as we talk to the author, Brad Roth, and dive into some of his deeper concepts of the book. And please, there's a link to this book in the show notes. If you want to read it, I encourage you to find it wherever books are sold. It is, again, Flyover Church, How Jesus' Ministry in Rural Places is Good News Everywhere by Brad Roth. For this week, I just want to remind you that this podcast exists to inspire and encourage and empower the leaders of the rural church. My hope is that you walk away from today challenged and encouraged with the same heart for your church and the same burning desire to do ministry for the Lord. On top of that, as always, I encourage you to reach out to a friend with this podcast. I could tell you to look on Spotify or Apple Podcast or our website, ruraladvancement.com. But again, the best way to spread the good news of what we're trying to share in the conversation of what we have here, the best way to spread these dialogues is to just have one pastor look at another pastor and say, man, there's a conversation you have to hear. So again, for this week, I have been your host, Joe Epley, and we will see you next week.